This week, an artificial intelligence autonomously dug into a software code base, found a 20-year-old structural flaw, and just, you know, fixed it while the engineering team was asleep.
Right. Completely on its own.
Yeah. And on top of that, a Fortune 500 CEO cited AI as the direct, literal reason for replacing 14% of his human workforce with what he's calling one-person teams.
Which is a massive shift. I mean, we're seeing a complete system overhaul right now.
Exactly. And the next time you feel a cold coming on, your doctor might just be a screenless band on your wrist that already diagnosed you like 3 days ago.
Yeah, the models aren't just generating text anymore. They are independently executing multi-step actions across both the digital and physical world.
We have officially left the generative era behind, and we are stepping into the agentic era. So welcome to today's deep dive. We're taking a massive stack of tech dispatches, research notes, and corporate memos from just this past week. We're sitting here on May 11, 2026, and we are going to extract the absolute signal for you.
Because there is a lot of noise right now.
So much noise. But our mission is to cut through all of that. I want to make sure you get those aha moments without the overwhelming information overload. And, well, my co-host is here to break down the actual mechanics.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Because if you don't understand how these systems actually function under the hood, this whole new landscape is going to feel like magic. And, you know, not necessarily the good kind.
No, definitely not.
Right. So understanding the underlying mechanisms, the actual how and why behind these wild headlines, that's really the only way to navigate a shift this massive.
Absolutely.
And I think we should start with your personal data, because before we even look at AI taking over corporate workflows, we really have to look at how your daily interface with these models just fundamentally changed this week.
Okay, let's unpack this, because OpenAI just rolled out GPT 5.5 Instant as the default for all ChatGPT users.
Yeah, yes. Default for everyone.
And the headline pitch is that it's vastly more concise, highly factual, especially in complex fields, you know, like law, medicine, and finance. But the feature that is making everyone pause is this new memory sources panel.
Yeah, that's the real story here.
Right. It's no longer this blank chat box that just forgets you the second you close the tab. It actively pulls from your past chats, your uploaded files, and crucially, your connected Gmail accounts.
And what's fascinating here is that the change in mechanism is profound. I mean, historically, using an AI required prompt engineering, you have to provide all the context every single time.
Like, I am a marketing manager at a mid-sized firm. Write this to a client who prefers a formal tone and so on.
Exactly. You had to set the stage. But the shift to GPT 5.5 Instant means the entire paradigm of prompting is basically dying. Contextual awareness is just the new baseline now.
Wow.
The system already read your last 50 emails. It already knows your tone. It knows the client. And it knows the project parameters before you even type a word.
It's like moving from a librarian who sits behind a desk and only answers specific questions you ask them to a personal assistant who has memorized your diary, is sitting on your shoulder looking at whatever you're looking at and just whispering in your ear.
That's a great way to put it. But, you know, that level of continuous monitoring introduces a massive trust barrier.
Oh, for sure. People are freaked out.
Right. The industry knows that having an AI silently scrape your Gmail feels incredibly invasive. And that's exactly why the Memory Sources panel exists. The AI now exposes its own mechanism to you.
Okay, so it shows its work.
Yeah. Next to its answer, it provides a transparent list of exactly why it knows something about you. It links directly back to the specific email or chat, and it gives you a button to permanently delete that context. It is essentially an engineering solution to a very human trust problem.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And speaking of that sitting on your shoulder analogy, it's getting incredibly literal right now.
Yeah.
Because the supply chain leaks this week show Apple's camera-equipped AirPods are in late-stage testing.
Yeah, they're supposedly targeting a September launch.
Right. And they capture low-resolution visual data so that Siri, which, let's remember, is now heavily rebuilt on Google's Gemini architecture, can actually see what you're looking at in real time.
Which perfectly explains the timing of what happened on May 7th. The industry is already calling it Voice AI Convergence Day.
I saw that on Twitter. Or, well, X.
Yeah. OpenAI dropped GPT Realtime Dash 2, and the critical metric there wasn't just speed. Speed is great, but the big deal was a 70.8% instruction retention rate.
Hold on. Explain instruction retention for the listener, because, I mean, that sounds like a super dry statistic, but it's really the whole ballgame for voice, right?
It is the entire ballgame. If you've used earlier voice models, you know they tend to just lose the plot after a few minutes of conversation.
Oh, yeah. They totally forget what you were talking about.
Exactly. They forget the very first instruction you gave them by the time you reach the fifth back and forth. So a 70.8% retention rate means the model can finally hold a complex set of rules in its active memory for an extended real-time audio session.
That's a huge jump.
It is. And when you combine that cognitive leap with the massive price cuts we saw this week from companies like 11 Labs, which makes voice synthesis practically free now, suddenly an always-on, context-aware voice agent goes from this clunky lab experiment to a highly viable consumer product.
So the AI can see what you see, it can hear what you hear, and it remembers what you emailed last week, which, you know, that's just the waking state. But the implications get absolutely wild when we look at what happens when you let the AI run in the background while you are asleep.
All right.
Because it turns out the AI is, quote unquote, dreaming now.
Yeah, Anthropic just pushed a massive update to their Claude-managed agents. They introduced a framework called Outcomes. Basically, they created a multi-agent orchestration system where one AI does the actual work and a completely separate AI A-grader Claude evaluates that work.
Okay, so if you've ever used an AI to draft a document and it sounded a bit robotic or cliche, imagine having a second hidden AI that automatically reads your draft, realizes it sounds super generic, and forces the first AI to rewrite it five times against a strict rubric before you even see the final product.
That's the exact mechanism, yeah. But the feature that is currently in research preview, the one that's really making waves, is the scheduled reflection process they are calling dreaming.
I have to ask about this. Is this just a cute marketing term, or is it actually mimicking biological human sleep? Because when humans sleep, you know, our brains are pruning neural connections, we're consolidating memories, we're figuring out problems we couldn't solve during the day. Is it doing that?
Well, I mean, it's not biological sleep, obviously.
Right.
But the functional outcome is remarkably similar. In software terms, it's a scheduled batch compute process. So instead of an AI starting fresh every single day and making the exact same formatting error in your reports over and over.
Which is so frustrating.
Oh, incredibly. But now the dreaming process activates when the system is idle. It reviews all of its past sessions, actively hunts for patterns in its own failures, and curates its own memory bank. The AI essentially updates its internal rules so it stops repeating errors.
Wow.
And in their early tests, this automated reflection loop increased task completion rates by roughly six times.
Six times. I mean, that is a staggering leap. And just to ground this in reality for a second, we aren't just talking about drafting better emails here. Look at the Mozilla case study from this week.
Yes, that was huge.
They used something called an agentic harness. Specifically, it was Claude Mythos, to find and fix 271 security bugs in the Firefox browser in just the month of April. And they normally only fix like 20 to 30 bugs a month.
We should probably define what an agentic harness actually is for a second.
Yeah, go for it.
Think of a large language model as a super intelligent brain floating in a digital jar. It can think, but it can't interact with the world. An agentic harness is like giving that brain a body. It gives it digital hands to open files, eyes to read code bases, and access to the terminal so it can run tests independently.
And what Claude Mythos did with those digital hands is incredible, because it fixed a 20-year-old XSLT bug.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone outside of software engineering, XSLT is a notoriously complex, really legacy way of translating data. Finding a bug in it is like looking for a needle in a two-decade-old haystack.
Oh, finding the bug is only half the battle.
Right.
Reproducing a 20-year-old bug so you can actually prove it exists in the first place is an engineering nightmare. But the AI didn't just write a patch. It autonomously generated the reproducible test cases to validate the vulnerability, applied the fix, and then verified it.
All on its own?
Entirely. This Mozilla report is basically the cleanest before and after data point of the entire year. It is definitive proof that AI has crossed the threshold from generating text to autonomously executing secure, complex engineering.
Okay. But if an AI can reflect on its mistakes and autonomously fix two decades of technical debt while the engineering team is asleep, the natural question becomes, what does this mean for human labor?
Yeah, that's the elephant in the room.
Up until this week, it felt like the corporate world was politely pretending AI was just a co-pilot, you know, like it would just make everyone a little faster.
Yeah.
But this week, the mask kind of came off.
It really did. The transition from software development tools to total organizational restructuring is happening at breakneck speed.
Because Coinbase just laid off 14% of its workforce. And Brian Armstrong, the CEO, didn't use the standard corporate speak. He didn't blame macroeconomic headwinds or shifting market conditions. He sent a company-wide email explicitly citing AI as the reason for the cuts.
Which is pretty unprecedented transparency.
Right. And he noted that non-technical teams are now actively shipping production code.
Yeah, and he pointed to a structural shift that is going to completely redefine the corporate ladder, the rise of what he called one-person teams. Coinbase is literally flattening its entire structure to a maximum of 5 management layers globally.
Wow.
And the new mandate is that every single leader, no matter what their title is, must act as an individual contributor.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because I need to push back on this narrative a little bit. We've heard the whole AI is coming for your job story for years now. And frankly, a lot of CEOs just use AI as a convenient buzzword to justify trimming the fat and boosting their quarterly profits. So is the one-person team actually a functional reality, or is this just Wall Street's favorite new flavor of corporate austerity?
I mean, it's a very valid skepticism. History is full of executives gutting companies for short-term gains. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the actual mechanics of the one-person team suggest this is a sustainable operational shift.
How so?
Well, imagine a single human product manager who writes a detailed set of instructions on a Monday morning. Agent A immediately generates the code base. Agent B is running continuous security stress tests in the background.
Right.
Agent C designs the user interface based on strict brand guidelines. And Agent D drafts the launch marketing copy. The human isn't doing the manual labor anymore. They are the editor-in-chief of a digital assembly line. And the capital markets are treating this as an absolute certainty.
Which brings us to the Anthropic news. Because they are finalizing a $1.5 billion joint venture with some of the biggest Wall Street titans on the planet. I'm talking Blackstone, Goldman Sachs, Hellman and Friedman.
Right. And to understand why that matters, you have to look at what they're actually building together. The goal of this joint venture isn't just to sell API keys. An API key is just a digital pass that lets a company rent access to Anthropic's AI brain.
Wall Street doesn't just want to rent the brain.
Exactly. They want to hardwire it into the operational floor of the global economy. This joint venture is creating a professional services firm specifically designed to rebuild workflows from the ground up inside private equity-owned companies.
And private equity firms own a massive, staggering chunk of the businesses we interact with every single day.
Exactly. And unlike a public company with a slow-moving, traditional enterprise IT department, a private equity firm has the unilateral power to force immediate, radical operational changes.
They can just rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah. They buy a company, strip out the middle management layers, implement these AI-native pods, and dramatically increase output while slashing payroll. The one-person team is not a thought experiment for 2030. It is the active, deliberate restructuring of capitalism being funded and deployed by Wall Street right now.
That is heavy.
They are taking the exact autonomous capability that fixed those Mozilla bugs and applying it to finance, legal review, and customer support.
Well, if private equity is restructuring the corporate world around 2047 digital oversight and total optimization, it is only logical that this exact same continuous monitoring model is being pointed at the most inefficient, unpredictable system we have, our own bodies.
Yeah, we are seeing that pivot right now.
This restructuring is coming straight for our biology. And the announcements from Google Health this week are just a perfect example of it.
Completely.
Because Google Health is officially replacing the legacy Fitbit app, and they are introducing a Gemini-powered AI coach. This isn't just a basic step counter anymore. It pulls in your fitness data, your sleep metrics, and this is wild, your actual certified U.S. medical records.
Which is a huge leap in data integration.
It is, and they are launching new hardware to support it, the Fitbit Air. It's a $99 completely screenless band with a 7-day battery. The entire design philosophy is built around 2047 uninterrupted tracking.
The hardware is interesting for sure, but the 9-month, 14,000 patient study they released alongside it is what fundamentally shifts the landscape of medicine.
Yeah, let's talk about the study.
They pitted an AI symptom checker against real human clinicians. And the clinicians, who were acting as a peer review board, ranked the AI's diagnosis as the number one choice 53% of the time. Independent human physicians only hit 24%.
But the real insight there wasn't just a scoreboard of AI versus doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was how the AI actually arrived at the correct diagnosis. Because they found that a structured AI interview beat passive symptom entry by 27% in diagnostic accuracy.
Yes. And this raises an important question about the fatal flaw of how we currently use AI for health. Think about the standard behavior right now. You feel sick, you go to WebMD, or you just type my stomach hurts into ChatGPT.
Guilty. We all do it.
Right. But passive symptom entry is terrible because human beings are incredibly bad at knowing what information is actually medically relevant.
That's true.
You might complain about stomach pain, completely forgetting to mention that you had a slight fever 3 days ago or that you recently traveled.
So the AI acts like a proactive detective. It doesn't just accept your first prompt. It interrogates you. It asks follow-up questions, weighs probabilities against your medical history, and investigates avenues a human might completely miss.
Precisely. And when you combine that active interrogation with the constant physiological data from something like the Fitbit Air, you get predictive medicine. In the study, the continuous data actually picked up physiological signals of illness-like subtle changes in heart rate variability and minor sleep disruptions days before the patients consciously realized they were sick.
That is wild. It's exactly like your car's check engine light coming on because a sensor detected a slight pressure drop, you know, days before the engine actually starts making a weird clanking noise. But this is for your body. The machine knows you're getting a cold before you feel a single sniffle.
Yeah, and the shift to proactive agentic AI is vital here. The system doesn't wait for you to type a prompt. It sees the pattern in your biometric data, cross-references your medical history, and actively reaches out to tell you what is happening.
Man, we've moved from an AI that reads your emails to build a personalized memory, to an AI that dreams up fixes for legacy code, to Wall Street restructuring human employment around AI pods, to a screenless band diagnosing your illnesses before you feel them. Where does this escalate to? What is the actual ceiling here?
Well, the velocity is certainly intense.
Because sitting here today, it feels terrifying.
To understand the ceiling, we have to look at a public statement made this week by Jack Clark, who is one of the co-founders of Anthropic. He stated there is a 60% probability of reaching recursive self-improvement, or RSI, by the end of 2028.
Okay, that is a heavy term. For the listener, let's break down recursive self-improvement. What does that actually mean?
RSI is the theoretical inflection point where an AI system becomes fully capable of building, training, and improving the next generation of AI systems entirely on its own, without any human intervention.
Oh, wow.
The machine figures out how to make itself smarter, which then allows that newly smarter machine to make an even smarter version of itself. It is a compounding loop of intelligence explosion compressed into a very short time frame.
I want you, listening right now, to just pause and internalize that date. 2028. That is barely 2 years away from right now. As someone who covers this industry, I have to ask you, is this just tech hype? I mean, founders love to talk up their own books to boost their valuations and secure more compute funding.
It's a necessary skepticism, definitely. But you have to look at the source. Jack Clark is an insider with direct access to the models currently baking in the training clusters.
He knows what's coming.
Yeah. And historically, he is not a hype man. He is deeply involved in AI policy, safety, and pragmatic forecasting. Now, he acknowledges that nobody knows exactly what the mechanics of RSI will look like once it starts.
Sure, it's uncharted territory.
But when someone at that specific level of the industry assigns a 60% probability to a 2-year timeline, it transcends marketing. It becomes a massive planning prompt. Whether you are making a 10-year career decision, mapping out a business strategy, or figuring out your personal finances, you have to factor that timeline and that probability into your reality.
That is a sobering thought. We have covered a tremendous amount of ground today, navigating from the personal to the biological to the absolute frontier of 2028. As always, I want to leave you with something highly actionable to do this weekend based on the sources we covered. So I have two specific challenges for you.
These are good ones.
First, open up ChatGPT and find that new memory sources panel we talked about. Look at exactly what the AI has extracted and learned about you from your Gmail and your past chats. Seeing your own context laid out by a machine is a bit of a trip, and frankly, you might want to exercise your right to edit or delete some of those assumptions.
I really recommend doing this. It is the most practical way to physically see how much context these models are constantly carrying. It completely demystifies the magic we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Second, grab a dense document you've been avoiding. Maybe a complex legal contract, a lengthy research paper, or a financial breakdown, and upload it to Notebook LM. But do not just click the auto-generate summary button. Use the new prompt steering feature to force the AI to do actual work.
Yes.
Tell it to aggressively find the hidden risks in the document, or force it to build you a chronological timeline of events. Actively interrogate the information using the agent, Rather than letting it passively feed you a summary, it will completely rewire how you process dense information.
It trains you for the new baseline. You have to practice being the manager of the AI, actively directing the assembly line, rather than just being a passive consumer of its output.
Exactly. Which leads me to a final thought I want you to mull over as you go about your week. If an artificial intelligence can definitively diagnose you days before you actually feel sick, and if it can comb through 20 years of code and fix structural errors while you sleep, and if it can actively manage a one-person corporate pod more efficiently than the traditional five-layer management team, well, what happens to human intuition?
That's the million-dollar question.
In a world where the machine's baseline is statistically measurably better than ours, do we eventually outsource our gut instincts entirely? Think about that the next time you feel a cold coming on and you check the screenless band on your wrist instead of your own body to see if you're actually sick. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the baseline, and we'll see you next time.